The title of the talk today is Bearing Gifts. And for people who don't know English as a first language, I want to just mention some of the meanings of the word bear, to bear. It can be like to bring, to carry, or to bring. So someone might bring gifts. They might carry them from town and bring them here. It can mean like to also to carry a child to be pregnant, or a tree that bears fruit, that brings from inside out a fruit. We can also get a sense of when the fruits are heavy on the branches. Sometimes the branches are really hanging down. They might even break. And also, we can bear what is heavy, like it could be a burden or a backpack, or we could say similarly to bear what is difficult. So the kind of root of the word to suffer is just to undergo, to kind of go through. So that's also, we could bear suffering, we could bear what seems to be too much. We can kind of survive it. One time I was with a group in the mountains in the southeastern United States for a few weeks. We were a smelly bunch of people, because we had no bath for that time, just dipping in the streams, but not soap. And we were mostly hiking and camping and getting stung by wasps. And there were a few days that we were going to go rock climbing. And so we went to a place to pick up the equipment for rock climbing. And we were already carrying the food and the cooking materials and the tents and the sleeping bags and the garbage. And so we had to add to that ropes and other kind of things for the climbing, which don't sound as heavy as they are, those ropes, because I remember offering to carry some of the ropes. Someone had to carry them. So I was carrying the garbage, and I thought, well, I could hang some of the ropes around my neck. And I was very much stronger physically at that time when I was 19. But even so, with my backpack and the group's garbage and the rope around my neck, I actually had trouble like taking steps. And we had some kilometers to go. And I remember my, let's say, surprise when I found out when we got to the camp that one of my friends in the group, someone that I was more connected to than the other people, a really tall, big, and even younger than I, and much stronger than I, young man, who hadn't carried any ropes or garbage, he told me that he was carrying some rocks in his backpack because he felt like it wasn't hard enough, what we were doing. Sometimes we can forgive our friends for being a little disconnected from reality. Sometimes with a spiritual life, I think that we decide it's not hard enough, or it's not hard in the way that we thought it would be good for it to be hard. And so we put rocks in our backpack, but we don't pick up the garbage or the ropes. On the other hand, looking back at myself at that time, probably it would have been good if I waited for someone else to offer to carry the ropes. So So my friend can forgive me for being too ready to jump in and not leave enough space for him to offer or to notice what was happening. So there are these ways and many ways that we habitually demand of ourselves. We feel that life demands of us certain kinds of ways of being strong again and again. So in my case, I felt like life demanded of me to carry everything I possibly could for the group, really to my physical limit. And I would say now that that was habit energy pushing me rather than just compassion and benevolence, just not only love. And my friend, who was probably twice as tall as I am, who was carrying the rocks, it seems to me that he was going by an idea of how it would be kind of, I actually want to say how it would be kind of cool, the kind of way that we could talk about later, how it was so easy for me that I carried rocks in my backpack. The kind of hardship that we dream of, that we can then talk about later, is usually the kind of hardship that has nothing to do with reality. So we may imagine in meditation or in life that sometimes or someday we will face that ultimate spiritual test. And we hope we will be able to pass the test. Or we put ourselves through what is obviously difficult so that we can feel that we are making ourselves stronger. And in this way, we are probably just strengthening in ourselves what is already strong and leaving out what is already left out and needs to be able to come in. The parts that are usually hidden, if we can leave space for them to come and carry some of the weight, leaving space for those less confident places in us to come out and say, okay, give me a rope, give me the garbage. Does that make sense yet? At all? I have a friend who talks about our shop window. What we put in the window to say what our shop is about. Some people might leave the shop window blank to express either that nothing is happening here, this is not a shop, or this is a very special kind of shop about simplicity. But the way that we present ourselves, we often don't see that in us. And it's actually a lovely practice to appreciate how we all so differently present ourselves. When we can drop back behind the scenes in ourselves so far that we feel the same energy that's moving and being freely used by this being, also being freely used in all these other ways. So there's a beauty to how life comes out differently in each of us. How life comes through us differently. But there's also the way that when we keep leaning too often on the same props, we keep leaning on the cheerfulness or the anger or whatever your thing is, maybe being smart or maybe being dumb. Some people lean on, they present that they are lucky or that they are so unlucky. And it would be a lot like if physically we always just leaned on one side. And we then might wonder why it is that we have pain in other parts of the body. Why, if I'm so much comfortable over here, why is this bothering me? I'm not doing anything to this. So we could look into and feel into what is heavy for us. What feels heavy? We can play with that also physically, and sometimes doing that physically gives a kind of experiential help for when we are playing with more subtle weights, more subtle kinds of heaviness. Does it make sense at all? Also the English, or also my way of using the English? So physically, does something feel heavy in the body? Does it feel heavy somewhere? Does an arm feel heavy? Does somewhere in my back feel heavy? Does my face feel heavy? Or not? And we could, if we feel like, really being like a child, and we could actually roll around into different positions and just feel, okay, nothing felt heavy here. What about like this? What about lying back? What about lying on the front? What about standing up? What I've noticed about heaviness, whether physical or otherwise, is that when I either, let's say, go into it, let myself feel it, or let that heaviness fall through into the ground, it's not heavy anymore. So even if I continue to feel into what I called heaviness before, what I start to feel rather is upliftment. And so there's a really lovely statement by a woman who is a dancer and a healer named Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen. And she says, "The weight you release into the earth comes back in equal measure as support." I think it's really worth trying on that bodily level a few times. And then also really worth trying with anything else that feels heavy. What I think happens here, or one of the things that I think happens, is let's say if my shoulder feels heavy, just by feeling into that heaviness or letting that heaviness be borne by something other than the shoulder itself. So by going into it, what happens, I find, when I actually feel it, it's kind of natural that then feeling that it feels heavy directly the weight starts to be borne, like to bear, something else starts to bear the weight. Eventually the earth. And so what I start to feel rather than heaviness is support. It's similar when it's an emotional or psychological or mental or any other kind of heaviness. It's often when I think I have to hold it, I have to bear it alone, by myself. Preferably, often, before anyone else notices. Unless heaviness is in your storefront, in your shop window, which it is for some people. For some people, what they have in the shop window is how heavy my life is. But they don't actually feel the heaviness. They don't actually go into it. Because they're leaning on it too much. They're making it do all of the bearing. So when I feel into a heaviness such as it's too much for me, this pain is too much for me, for example. Or this noise is too much for me. Or this brain is too much for me. We could say that we are right. It is too much for me. It's too much for me to bear alone as who I think I am. I'd like for you to feel and notice during a few days, if you feel heaviness, what is the reason? What makes it heavy? It's very often some kind of judgment. It's unfair. It shouldn't be, or it should be different. Some kind of shame and self-pity. And some kind of miseducation that I do not have enough resources for this. I don't have access to what I need to bear this. Does it make sense yet? Okay. The last part? Let's see, what was it? Okay, so if something feels heavy, what I found is very often it's some kind of idea, but maybe a very deep one, a judgment, that it's unfair, some situation, or it's too noisy, for example. It's unfair, we're trying to be silent and they're being so noisy. Shame, which includes, which is a kind of judgment that what is happening is wrong, shouldn't be. Self-pity is the same, another kind of judgment. What is happening is wrong, shouldn't be. No one else has to go through this. No one else has to bear this. That something is not enough in me to meet this, to bear this. That I do not have enough access to the resources needed. So that last part I consider to be a miseducation. We think that we are supposed to do it alone. And with people like many of us, where we have a lot of contact with Western culture, this is the idea. The dream is individual glory. Which, what it does is it leaves us with individual suffering. And the hope of the glory. So the difference between pain and suffering, we can just use the words differently. The Dalai Lama said one time, I find a very key statement. I'll go with his actual words instead of my memory. Suffering is not overcome by leaving pain. So notice that he's not saying, put rocks in your backpack. The more pain, the less suffering. He's saying, suffering is not overcome by leaving pain. Okay, and suffering is overcome by bearing pain in a wider context. Let's say bearing pain not as me bearing the pain, but as us undergoing something. That's part of life. So if we feel sometimes how we wish things could be a little bit different, if only it could be like a little more chai, or if the chai could have a little more milk, or if there could be the herbal tea, maybe double volume, or more herbs, or not so hot, or whatever. These things that we know are not the most important thing in the world, but sometimes they feel like they are the most important thing in the world. If it could be okay that we have preferences, those are there sometimes, and okay that life does not obey our preferences. That life cannot obey our preferences because life is free. That thank goodness life does not obey our preferences. And therefore, sometimes we might feel that life sucks. That life sucks. We might feel sometimes discomfort, pain, it's unpleasant. So there's one of the many kind of lists in Buddhism that developed over the centuries, probably as a way to remember things rather than as how they came out of the Buddha's mouth. In my mind, I call them the eight worldlies as a kind of pet name because I find it such a useful list. The real name is one of those sort of what I would call ridiculous names that doesn't really tell you what it's about. The eight worldly conditions, which what it means is these are things that happen in life. Pain and pleasure happen in life, like it or not. Doing well on your spiritual path, giving it all you've got or not, pain and pleasure happen. Success and failure happen, whether you are successful in your spiritual path or not. Success and failure, loss and gain, and it's always hard to remember all of them. Yes, because it's so similar, yeah. Success and failure and, what do they usually call it, blame and?
Praise.
Praise and blame, thank you, yeah. Praise and blame will happen. And if we could feel and hear how freeing that is, it doesn't tell us how we're doing. If it doesn't mean that if there's more success, more praise, more gain, and more pleasure, it doesn't mean we're doing better. If we get more blame and more loss and more blame, loss, pain and failure, it doesn't mean we're doing worse. Yeah. So if we can kind of feel like our freedom and another kind of pleasure doesn't depend on what life dishes out today. So the Buddha also talks about another kind of pleasure that's not part of the eight worldlies. It's not the pleasure pain kind of gain. It's what happens when we let the earth bear the weight. It's also what happens when we let success be there and don't take it personally. So there's a, I find, really accurate and kind of ruthless and very telling statement by one of my favorite artists, Henri Matisse. In his book, Jazz, he considered his art a kind of prayer. And in this book, he says that the words are just there as a visual element to give space between the pictures, because the pictures are so vivid. But that gives him a kind of smoke screen so that he can say what he wants without attracting too much judgment. He's saying, don't take the word seriously, and then he can say what he wants. So this is kind of like letting the earth bear the weight. Instead of having to bear the blame himself, he said, it's not my fault what's written there. It's just a visual element. So then he can actually ask himself in public the question he asks to himself, no one else is asking him. Do I believe in God? Yes, when I work, he says. He answers himself in his splashy calligraphy. He says, when I am submissive, so like, let's say, when I bear life, and when I'm submissive and modest, I sense myself helped immensely, a lot, by someone who makes me do things that surpass myself. So he's using God and someone language, which I usually don't. You can translate it in your mind if you want. It's already translated from French to English. I believe in God when I work, which means when I'm submissive and modest, I sense myself helped immensely by someone who makes me do things that surpass myself. So it makes me go beyond what I thought I am. While he's painting, he can break the rules because it's not him doing it. Still, I feel no gratitude. This is where he becomes, like you can hear, he probably didn't go to church. Still, I feel no gratitude toward him, which he puts capital letters and italic, really emphasized. I feel no gratitude toward him because it is as if I were watching a conjurer, so a magician who's doing a show, whose tricks I cannot see through. So he's just kind of doing what he's told, but it's magic also for him. But he's not in on the trick. He's not in on the magic. He's not in on the joke. The joke is also on him. He continues, I then find myself thwarted. I'll say what that means in a second. I find myself thwarted of the experience that should be the reward for my effort. So that means he lets the magic happen, to put it in a little bit more of a lighter tone. He lets the magic happen through him. But he doesn't know how the magic happens. But he has to let it happen through him or it doesn't happen. That's all he knows. And then he doesn't get the reward that he should get for his effort. So in the art world, you would, at that time especially, break through the cliches, the known, with individual effort, like an artistic hero, bringing in the new artistic age. And he even talks about the importance with every painting of giving birth, of bearing a completely new, completely fresh expression for all of humanity. But he doesn't get the reward for that effort. So he says, the last line is, I am ungrateful without remorse. I'm ungrateful and I don't feel bad about being ungrateful. Because I didn't get anything for me. So it's kind of a backward and very unspiritual way of expressing what I'm talking about, which is the reason I'm quoting him. To say it in a kind of, yes?
He's not getting any reward, he says.
Yeah.
But he's getting, to me, he's getting the ultimate
yeah.
reward by not getting the reward and somehow knowing it. That was my problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what he's really pointing out is that the reward that we dream of, so also us, when we dream of enlightenment, if we do, or maybe we dream of peace or self-acceptance or stillness or escape or whatever, what we dream of is not what we will get. And if we get that, it will not be the nourishment that we need. Even if we get our picture of the reward, it's actually not what we are driven for. It's not what we're bearing this immensity for.
It seems like there's so many things like that in life that we think is what we want, or maybe is what the world
yeah.
has taught us that we think we want.
Yeah.
But then in the ultimate moment, maybe the ultimate moment is death. We see through all of that at that time.
If we have practiced seeing through in every chance that we get before that moment, because there are all of these deaths going on every day. Yeah. So there, let's say the two kind of things that we bear as human beings, the two kinds of difficulties that we bear, or challenges. We bear the pain, but we bear the pain and pleasure, we bear the success and failure, that is not really to do with us, that's just going to happen. But let's say today in meditation, or just being here when we don't even know what meditation is, there are moments that are difficult to bear because it's uncomfortable, not only physically. We may not know why we suddenly feel we've got to get out of here. Something is shaking in us. These things that, again, the list, the five hindrances, that really are five signs of breakthrough. We're starting to go deeper, and it's really uncomfortable. Something's starting to open up, and it's really uncomfortable. That's one part of what we bear as human beings. But we also bear what someone calls the golden shadow. So we bear like the unfolding and the healing of what is wounded. We bear the pain of the wounds that we decided or could not feel before, that now are available to be felt, that are asking to be felt. And we didn't feel them before because it is painful. But also, if we don't give too much of a story about it, about me bearing my pain and my wounds, if it's just painful, it's bearable. Even when the mind says it's unbearable, it's too much, it's actually in the moment bearable. But there's also the ways that Matisse is saying here, someone who makes me do things that surpass myself. The ways that we're bigger than something in us wants to be. Something in us doesn't want to be that big. Something in us wants to have this little story that I'm insecure or I'm angry or I can't bear the pain or... So there's, we could say another way of saying is, there's bearing the sight of what is visible when we relax and find gentle eyes to see with. Bearing the sight of those wounds, bearing the feeling of that also. What we usually do, if we have a small glimpse, a tiny little look at where we have actually been hurt in this life, or in our history, let's say. And how automatically we have also hurt from that same place. We have hurt others, we have hurt life. We have continued to hurt ourselves from that place. If we see that at all, we think it's something really wrong with me. Something I must have done wrong. And we close our eyes and we close that package on the shelf, or we close that cupboard. Even if we may say, oh yes, I saw that story, now it's finished. We wish. When we learn with gentle eyes, allowing seeing to happen, which is like a see, feel, seeing, feeling to happen, we could say in two ways, the wound is healed, healing happens in that gaze. That gaze bears healing. Or we could say that way of seeing right through dissolves. It is our resistance to seeing that keeps it going, the being hurt and hurting. So that's what I mean by bearing the sight. It's a little bit of a play on words in English. We bear the sight of something because it's difficult to see. But we bear the seeing of. We give birth to a new way of seeing that brings healing, the way a tree bears fruit. Just a small example. I'm noticing with my son Gyan, in recent months, it starts to be one of the most difficult parts of his day when he does something that he thinks is a mistake. So today he was learning to dry his hands for the first time, I think, by himself. He was daring to take the towel and dry his hands after washing them. And then I said, what if you also put the towel back where it goes, right there? And he couldn't quite reach alone. We did it together. And then maybe I left too soon. Because as he left the towel in its place, another towel fell on the ground, and a spoon fell with it, and it made a big clatter. And he started crying. And later he told the story. He said, Gyan was so sad. I was saying, today Gyan dried his hands by himself for the first time. And Gyan, he said, no, Gyan was so sad. Other towel fall down. So it's not that it hurt for the towel to fall down, of course. The spoon didn't hurt him or anyone else. But he's starting to get the idea that we have. Hey. That to do a mistake is to do something wrong that makes us sad. So it's great training for me. Now, whenever I do something that could be called a mistake, I say, ah, look, mommy dropped the cup. Mommy spilled the milk. Ha, ha, ha. Isn't that funny? What a surprise. To give him another way of interpreting the circumstance. It's so good. Instead of, oops, I hope no one noticed that I dropped the cup and spilled the milk and... Look, everybody, look. So So a lot of the spiritual traditions of the world talk about giving birth to ourselves as what we are here to do. And it's something that I really wonder what you think it means. What are we giving birth to? What would we give birth to if we wanted to do that? To whom? Why that image? What is that? To give birth is to give life to something that is not me, that depends on me completely, but is not me and not mine. Or we can think about the tree and the fruit. The tree giving birth to the fruit or to the seeds in the fruit. We can imagine, if we want, that the tree feels so good when it gets to come to the fruit part of its life. But maybe it's even more happy when it gets to come to the winter part and just rest. Or when it comes to the new leaf part. Or the wind part. Who knows? But the fruit on the tree is not actually for the tree. The branches can even be destroyed by that much weight. So usually on a meditation retreat, when we talk about bearing ourselves, it's more like, how do I live with this mess? But bearing ourselves in the sense of giving birth to ourselves, or at least being pregnant with something. Something that has to do with life that goes beyond, that surpasses myself. That calls me to give everything to it. And it's not that it has to be that beautiful story about giving birth and feeling like a lotus opening. The Buddha's mother died in childbirth. Jesus' mother had to go to a barn and then run away to Egypt. Bearing what comes to us that happens to be heavy, but not trying to bear it alone. Letting life come in, or letting the weight fall out, fall through and out. Starts to bring the light into the weight. By including ourselves in what we give to the earth. So there's this possibility that what is difficult may not be exactly my fault or my responsibility. It might just happen to be hard. It's like when the earth comes back with the equal upliftment. An immense care comes through that is also not only for me, but includes me. I can include myself in what I give up, to be born, to be carried. And then my heart's vastness is born. And includes me. So it's not like pretending joy. That would be heavy, after a while at least. But when we give up the story of carrying our burden, we're in contact with the resources that can bear the light, that much vastness. And it's not pretend. There's someone named Ernesto Cardenal who says the vastness of the universe, which you contemplate, which you see, which you look at in a starlit night, becomes even vaster when you include yourself. When you look at yourself as part of this universe, and when you realize that it is you who are this universe contemplating itself. I might read that one again, I think. The vastness of the universe, which you may contemplate in a starlit night, becomes even vaster when you look at yourself as part of this universe. And when you realize that it is you who are this universe contemplating itself. The light and the weight together. Are there any questions? Or something, any comments? Something you have to say? Peter?
When you talked about Matisse, it sounded for me that still the ego is talking, or he has to, but knowing something about the self. And so there are two me, no? Mm-hmm. Who are playing with each other.
Yeah.
I find it very beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's not pretending anything, it's expressing what is, you know, what is real.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes a more spiritual quote does not speak to us much. As much. Lenny?
In regard to the pain and seeing and perhaps understanding a little bit about where it came from. And then somehow seeing the opposite side of without joy, you wouldn't know pain. I'm kind of what I'm trying to say is when we experience the pain and we can just experience the pain as the pain without all of that, and it's okay to have the pain and to experience the pain. And then that seems to lessen it or even sometimes make it go away when there's the full realization of all of it as that is happening.
Okay. So there's something painful and we find a way of relaxing and feeling that. And Lenny G was saying we can feel the pain without all of that, which I think you mean the baggage, the story, what makes it heavy. Or we could bear it with all of that and say, wow, that's heavy, too much for me. Who can bear this? And let something else step in, leave space for something else to step in. Maybe some other part of us, or maybe something bigger than us, either one. So even if the story is going on, we can also feel the pain of the story. Another different kind of pain, harder to bear. Okay. And that can be healing. There could be joy that's also hard to bear. It also feels too much for me to bear, and our usual route would be to express it, to share it. And I would think that we could find other ways of sharing it. Sharing it first with everybody inside us. Letting it percolate through, letting it really drip through everywhere inside. And knowing that that is another way of sharing it. The pain becomes a way in when we feel it, knowing we don't have to carry it alone, that it's not our private shame or problem.
Exactly what you mean by that. I mean, when I'm feeling pain, I feel the pain in me at that moment, mm-hmm. and I don't...
What is added is usually the sense that this shouldn't be happening. There's something wrong. This is not to say there could be something wrong in the sense of maybe your knee hurts and you do need to see a doctor. But that's another practical situation that we can flow through without suffering. When I could either not feel the resistance to the pain or include my resistance in what I'm feeling as part of what's uncomfortable, then I'm not alone carrying it anymore. It's not my story. And that's when there's enough space for healing to happen, which many people experience that exactly where it hurts, exactly where the wound is exactly where they actually experience the light coming through that place. And sometimes they mean light in the sense of creativity and kindness, and sometimes they just experience, just like a broken pot, that's where you can see the light through, the light's coming through there. Because that's where we think we're not strong enough. We're not doing it right. And so our guard is a little bit down. It's not following my plan here. So the light sometimes can be more visible there. A young man who lost his legs, I think maybe one leg, as a teenager, very active guy, was really angry for a few years about his situation. And then someone suggested that he go and visit other people in the same situation in the hospital and just talk to them, be with them, entertain them. And there was a young woman in the same situation who was not talking to anyone. She was that upset, which is understandable. So he started jumping around the room on whether his fake leg or his one leg or whatever, until finally they could communicate. And shortly after that, he went back for a kind of check-in with his therapist of a few years to help him integrate this experience. And they looked at some drawings that he had done in the early years, and there was a picture of a flower vase, like where you put flowers. that was broken. And so he, with a big black mark, he'd made it look broken right there. And so he picked up that drawing, and he was looking at it. And he said, this one's not finished. I have to finish this one. And he picked up the yellow, and he made a lot of marks around the black. And he said, that's where the light comes through. So we have time now for the walking meditation, or if anyone feels like continuing to be here, sitting or lying, feel free. And then half an hour time before the dinner. Thank you very much. I'll stay here for a few minutes if anyone wants to come and whisper a question.